Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I'm the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hello.
Whoa, we got the show's namesake, BJ Shea.
Hi.
Oh, geez, everyone's yelling now. And running the boards is Joey D's.
Wow.
Wednesday, everybody. Wow, Luigi's running our boards.
Wednesday.
On today's show, we will talk comic books with BJ Shea, because he reads comic books. He also plays board games, so we'll get some board game reviews from BJ Shea.
Hey, wait a minute. You talking about me?
Yeah. We're going to talk about something special that's happening in just a couple days for Star Trek's 55th anniversary.
Bam, bam, bam.
And, of course, the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com. Get blogs, podcasts, and more. Or, you know, just search BJ Shea's Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, and the Odyssey.
Yeah, so many ways to get a hold of us. You can subscribe whichever podcatcher you've got, or you can just listen to us on that old Odyssey app. Lots of fun ways to listen to us, and really do appreciate you doing that. Let's get right into it, because it is comic book day, in addition to it being Wednesday.
Yeah, it is.
And BJ, how are you doing at the Spider-Man comics?
Well, how am I doing with the Spider-Mans, huh?
They seem to be putting out a lot more of those, right?
Yeah, they got a new writer, and it's it's interesting. They've got this guy, Zeb Wells, that's just put together this gigantic story arc, and I was reading the editor who just said, he said he's wanted to work with this guy, Zeb Wells, for so long, and a lot of people, I guess, in the world of comic books know of Zeb and think he's a tremendous talent. I, myself, not super familiar with Zeb, but the excitement that the Spider-Man editor has for what we're about to get onto, I'm like, all right, well, let's just see what's going on, and, so there's a corporation called the Beyond Corporation that mysteriously just had somebody come visit Peter Parker, and that would be his clone.
Oh dear.
He has a clone named Ben.
Wasn't that the Scarlet Spider back in the day?
I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
But Ben, you know, is like, went his own way and just tried to find his own life and, you know, realize he's got all the memories of Peter, but he's... You know, but he came, he said, Peter, look, I really want to be Spider-Man. I'm just like you. I got your memories. I wanted, you know, I'm motivated the same way you are. And, you know, he said, look, this company came to me and, well, they hired me because they own the Spider-Man brand. And Peter's like, what?
What? He's,
and then he remembered, oh, damn it. When Doc Ock was in my head, that's right. He basically put the brand underneath Peter Parker Industries, but then Peter Parker Industries got sold and Pete forgot. So Spider-Man brand is no longer his.
Wow.
So Ben's like, yeah, so they hired me, and now I'm like, I'm officially the Spider-Man. And Peter's like, are you blanking kidding me?
Right. I love the fact that one of the most hotly contested Spider-Man arcs, where Doc Ock basically like took over Peter Parker, still has long-lasting repercussions. That's actually really cool.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Rev. And so it's pretty clever. And this whole Beyond Corporation, like, what are they about? What is going on? I mean, they've got some insidious plans we don't know. But part of it is that they went and got Ben the clone and said, all right, buddy, we got to get you all fixed up, tightened up. And they got some plans. It's some weird stuff is happening. I don't know what it is.
This really feels like Captain America or Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yep.
When they still had Mr. John Walker as the captain. Like, it seems like very parallel to something along those lines.
It's like, I'm the captain now.
You're not.
No.
So, as you know, I read Comixology, and I will just give you the summary for issue 76, which is the next, which is the chapter 2 of Beyond. And here's their summary.
All right.
The unthinkable has happened. Zeb Wells and Patrick Gleason, and these are the guys that write and draw, they will remind you why you love and hate comics. That's all they're telling you about this issue 76. That's all they want you to know.
This might be bigger than Captain America saying Hail Hydra. I'm very excited. I just want to see what the fans are going to do, because you know what? The fans, they're never salty.
No, not at all.
Never.
Any other comics you've been reading?
Well, of course, got to talk about America's First Family, or Marvel's First Family, I suppose we should say, and that is the Fantastic Four. It is, of course, a Halloween edition. Dan Slott's still writing this bad boy. And, you know, I love this. So if you don't know, Ben and Alicia are married. And Ben and Alicia's the blind sculptress, who also is the daughter of the puppet master, who used to use a special kind of clay to control beings. Mm-hmm. And they have adopted two kids, a little boy who is a Cree and a little girl who's a Skrull. And they both used to fight in an arena at this cosmic casino, and they would fight for entertainment. People would bet on them, and they got rescued and became, you know, the kids, basically the adopted kids of Ben and Alicia. And this, the kids went out trick or treating, but of course, you know, they're battle masters, so they came up with a giant plan on how to basically maximize all the candy they could get by getting everybody in the family to take them out trick or treating, making them believe this was the first time they were going out for the evening.
That's adorable.
And they had just tons and tons of candy, and then Ben found out. He's like, "All right, you, we're going back, and you're bringing all the candy back."
Oh, you can't do that. They've already got it, Ben. Come on, what the hell are you doing, buddy?
And Ben's like, "You gotta tell them what's up." And it's very adorable, I have to say. It really was a fun issue, but also a heartwarming issue, as you know, the Cosmic Casino lady was like, "I'm going to come back and get these kids," because the casino wasn't doing good business, and they realized, "Oh, you know what? Even though I made a deal to let these kids go, I'm going back on my deal." And she sends a bunch of her soldiers, and they got a fight, and you know, the Human Torch is still basically burning at degrees that no one can be around him. And that's a little bit of a tragic story, as Ben does go visit him because he's kind of the only one that can.
Oh, yeah.
And even though Johnny is wearing a protective suit to protect everybody else, Ben's still got to wear a protective thing. And even then, he can't get too close.
Wow.
It's kind of a beating. And it's a heartwarming sort of father, son, adopted kids, which hit me in the feels since I'm adopted. And, you know, Dan Slott, man, he just brings a tear to your eye, the son of a gun.
He's a heck of a writer, man.
Yeah, so that's Fantastic Four number 37. Really love what he's doing. And the title of it is There Are Monsters on Yancey Street, which, of course, that's Ben's old neighborhood, and that's where they're living.
Yeah.
And Ben actually is the monster on Yancey Street, but it's Halloween, so.
Oh, yeah. It's less spooky, more fun.
Yeah.
Moving on from that, board game talk. You play a lot of board games, and I know that you love going, even you love buying them. You love every little aspect of them, even buying. Like stuff from like the accessories and stuff, too. The things that I see whenever, you know, you have those game nights have always been crazy. Are we talking board games this time?
Why not? If you want to, let's talk. And you know what? Of course, I'll have a space game. But before I talk about my space game, let's talk about a game that our buddy Josh, you know, from the Board Game Alliance, which someday that'll be back on once we all get un-COVID-ed. He turned me on to this game that he got the upgraded component. So he's got this really cool dice delivery mountain thing that looks amazing. But here's the story. The story is the dwarves once lived beneath three mighty mountains. And after centuries of war, they defeated their age-old enemies, the dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Moving to the surface, the dwarves built magnificent cities and won renown for their heartening beer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But guess what? The dragons are back, and it's like, ah, damn it!
Just give the dragons some beer. I think they'll be okay with that.
And of course, that's the deal. You don't give the dragon some beer, but you can give your you give your opponent some beer.
Oh, okay.
And if you give me some beer, you know what? You're going to get some bonuses yourself. And here we have the game called Dice Miner, and you have to draft the dice you covet, which basically you got to dig into the mountain to get the dice you want, but you only get the dice that are available on the first level. And it's a clever dice delivery system where you dump all the dice into this mountainous looking system that allows you only access to certain dice at certain times. And each die does certain things and allows you to manipulate stuff so that you can get points in the game. It is a quick game. It is a clever game. And you know what? I mean, it's like you really go, I have fun. There's a lot of asymmetry, but it's not so like massively complicated asymmetry. And it's quick. I mean, it is one of those games where you go, all right, let's have a beer and play a game.
Nice.
About me giving you a beer. Like, I have a die with a beer on it, and it's like, have a beer. And I gave you a beer, and I get rewarded by the game for it.
This could turn into an interesting drinking game, just going to say.
I won't say that it wouldn't, because after all, they are dwarves.
Yep.
And it's from Atlas Games, and I don't, and they, it says here, the fancy copy costs about $64. If you get the standard edition, that only costs you $26, and I'm
That's a good price on that then.
Yeah, so it's it's a pretty good, you know, $26 to $31, it looks like. And it's called Dice Miner from Atlas Games. Go check it out. See if you can find it somewhere.
Well, moving on from Dice Miner, we do need to talk a little Star Trek, BJ. I know we talked about it on Monday.
Yes.
But there's something coming out on Friday. Oh, I like your take right there. The History Channel is actually going to celebrate.
Don't have sex at all. Celebrate.
They're going to celebrate Star Trek's 55th anniversary with a 10-part docuseries called The Center Seat, 55 Years of Star Trek. It premieres this Friday, November 5th at 10 p.m., like I said, on the History Channel. And it's narrated and executive produced by Miss Gates McFadden. You might know that name, BJ.
I love it because she's got one of the more interesting stories, and I wonder if they'll cover that, where she was kicked off the show, then brought back on the show. She wasn't in second season of Next Gen as Dr. Crusher, Will Wheaton, you know, basically Wesley's mom.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Wesley's mom, she had it going on. They should never have gotten rid of her.
Dr. Beverly Crusher.
And Gates McFadden, that's going to be fun to really go through 10 episodes of how Star Trek is. And it's, you know, it's going to be talking about how it's affected culture.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The first one, I mean, the first episode is I think it's titled something about Lucy. Because, of course, and I forget the title, but it had Lucy in the title. Like Lucy Loves Space or something like that. Because Lucille Ball from the Lucy, you know, Lucy and Desi and,
yeah,
you know, I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
She was a big fan of what she saw, and she wanted their studios, Desilu Studios, to really have a great show. They were just doing half-hour comedies or whatever, and she's like, I want to do an hour show. And she, I guess, she got to see the pilot, or she had conversations with Roddenberry, but thought, oh my God, this is an amazing thing. Let's make this happen.
And I did say this was a 10-episode series, but yes. What they're going to be doing on the History Channel is that they're going to be playing the first 4 episodes, and then the next 6 later on you will be able to get via their streaming service, because that's how every company does it now. History has their own called the History Vault. So,
what?
Yeah, so the first 4 will be available on the History Channel every Friday, and then if you want to watch more of them, BJ, you get another subscription service you can get at least for a month so you can watch all of them.
I'm not happy. I wonder if Hulu will get them. I think History also ran Alone, the TV show. And if that's the case, sometimes Hulu picks that up.
Yeah, that might be further down the line.
Dang it!
Yeah, but at least you can watch the first 4 and you can get that in there, because I know you still have your cable and you can end up watching that. So it's
I got the first 4 and now I'm disappointed. I really was excited. I was excited, and now I'm sad.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you can still watch it whenever you want to, and yes, it's going to focus on the 55 years of Star Trek and candid interviews with everyone across the whole thing, from Nichelle Nichols, Brett Spiner, Kirstie Alley. Remember, she was a Vulcan in the movies.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff behind why she didn't come back for Star Trek 3 and 4.
Interesting.
Star Trek 3 and 4. It'll be interesting to get her take on it, because I've heard Leonard's take reading his book, I Am Spock.
Oh, yeah.
He talks about, you know, at least his version of why Kirstie didn't come back for Star Trek 3.
And so that's something you can check out. Now, I know if you want to make sure and watch the entire series of something, you can go out there and get on Netflix and do something that everybody has done. And I know that you have done yourself, BJ, Squid Game. Squid Game is out.
Oh, yes.
And it has been a gigantic phenomenon. I've managed to watch the first episode, and I was kind of like, nah, I get the gist. I think, Joe, you've watched, what, 2 episodes?
2 episodes.
It looks scary.
It's kind of the same idea with that. You're like, okay, we get the idea going on.
It's good.
BJ.
Well, hold the phone, though. Joe, would you say, though, that episode 2 you did not expect?
I mean, sure. Sort of. Yeah.
Yeah,
sort of.
I mean, what happened in episode 2? I thought episode 2 was going to be more of what I expected. And then all of a sudden, episode 2 said, well, we're going to give you this. And that, I mean, so you didn't expect it, but you weren't surprised, is what you're saying, Joe?
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. So then at this point, I've only watched the 1. Joe's watched the 2. BJ, you have watched the entire series, and you definitely want to make sure that we talk about this.
Yeah, because really, there's stuff there's a lot. I mean, this is well thought out. There's a lot of things that happen, and characters you haven't even seen yet, and storylines that are really, like, amazing. Okay. Even though you think that you know what's going on, but in reality, you know, this really is wild. And what I also read about squid, you know, is that the conditions in Korea are pretty bad. That, you know, what they portray of why people would be motivated to participate in Squid Game, which basically it's supposed to be now. This takes place now, mm-hmm. and there's a secret organization that runs a thing called the Games, basically. And if you are somebody that is in just horrific trouble, usually financially, or you might have some other reasons why you would, well, go play a game to try to get a lot of money. And let's just say that if you don't win the game, and there's multiple games that you have to participate in, and they're all children's games, mm-hmm. you know, but they're very interesting versions of these children's games. If you don't win, well, let's just say, well, listen, you know what? It's high risk, high reward. It's all.
That's a good way to put that in gamer terms.
Yeah, and so you go, okay, I see what's going on. It's clever, but then they do so much more. And I don't want to say any more because I feel like I don't want to do anything at all to really spoil the surprises that you're going to see by going, okay then. Wow, all righty. And I was surprised by a few things that show showed me. I was like, oh, okay, I didn't expect that to be the thing. So, you know, that's it's very, very well done. Yes, it's hyped up, and yes, everybody wants to do it, mm-hmm. and yes, kids can't wear the Halloween costumes at some school. yeah, all of right. that's true, and usually when it's like that hyped up, you go, okay, maybe it's, but really, they did a very, very nice job with it, and my suggestion is to definitely watch it dubbed, because it turns out the subtitles are not good. Mm-hmm. They really aren't. They don't match what the people were actually saying in Korean, and the dubbed version is at least better. It's a better translation. That's what I come to find out anyway. It seemed to really give it to me in English language with the intent it was meant, whereas when they just translated it badly from like, okay, here's what the words mean in English, it's like, but those words kind of suck. They did a good job with the dubbing where they were able to really go, no, here's what they really meant when they were saying what they were saying.
Fair enough. Because, yeah, it was built in Korea, it was made in Korea, and it is out there on Netflix, hit hot fire, everyone's talking about it. Yes, there are costumes out there, and we'll have to see.
Everywhere,
but don't have your kids dress up like that for school. That's not appropriate.
And you know, the motivating factor for a lot of people that get into the games themselves, that's what people are writing about, saying Korea's like that. Now, you know, people are so desperate, and you know, and when you think of the North Korea and South Korea and all the, you know, all the history that that's been, mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are, like usual, innocents are always just caught in the crossfire of governments and then the wars they wage.
Yeah.
And you, so that it like the motivation of these people, you might go, I mean, would it ever be that bad? Really? Would I ever do that? Well, as an American and the life we have, we just have no idea that, well, what would it be like if we lived where they live, and it's, they just don't have what we have. And then they have the BS going on that we don't have. So that's what people have said, is like, yeah, the Squid Games themselves, that's not real. And that's overdone maybe in some people's brains, but the motivation for those people to go do that, that's real. That happened. That's what's going on in Korea for a lot of people.
Interesting. Well, we got to move on now because it is time for
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
What's up, Vicky?
I got something that I feel like might spark some fighting, maybe. Oh,
okay, I'm ready. I am.
Okay.
Fight!
Ranker is known to do, like, the crowdsource ranking. Like, they'll put out something like, what is the top whatever?
Yeah.
And people vote on it and they rank them.
And so, usually the website is ever-changing. So mm-hmm. the thing you think might be number one after about a week or so might bottom
change.
Out. Yeah.
But when has a list ever had people fight?
Right. but this one, since you're here, BJ, and you already talked about some games, how about we do the best board games of all time?
Oh! I think BJ will have opinions about this. Well, if this was BJ's list, I feel like Twilight Imperium would be number one.
And it's got to be in the top 10.
It is not.
Oh.
Twilight Imperium is 36.
All right, well, I'll be interested to see what they put in the top 10. I may not know all of these games. It depends on how old school they are. I completely disagree. Twilight Imperium 4, I think, should be in the top 10. Maybe the first, you know, it depends on what iteration they're talking about, but okay. All right. At least it's on the list.
The top 10 is a good mix of your childhood games and games that we like to play too.
These are going to be a lot of the classic ones.
But
we're going to talk about those.
I'm ready to burn
the place down.
There's a lot of like, I don't want to say new because not some of these are like 15, 20 years old or
newer.
Even more, but like newer. They're not
new
your,
generation.
They're not Shoots and Ladders. Okay,
okay. That's the first thing I was going to say. Was like, okay, Candyland, Shoots and Ladders, Trouble. So start us off at number 10 then and see where we're going with this.
Number 10. It's a strategy board game about World War II.
Stratego?
No.
Axis and Allies.
Axis and Allies.
See, that was the one I never got into.
Yeah, that's fair. I can't begrudge that game for being on the list. It really did start off like the strategy area control, 4X, you know, whatever you want. I mean, it did all that. So, it definitely was a... You know, it was a big game that all the super geeks were playing before all of us started getting into the board game thing.
See, I lumped it in with Risk, which meant I never wanted to play it.
It's much better than Risk.
It's funny that you say Stratego, because that is number 11.
Oh, okay. All right, then.
And you did say Risk is number 8.
Risk is number 8?
I never played that game. It just looked way too much for me.
I don't think I've ever finished a game of it.
Here's the thing. It's definitely a classic game, but there are so many... To me, better area control games that have come out over the years that I just don't think Risk holds up. And area control is not my... I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head, but I'm not a super area control guy. But I'm looking around, and I'm looking around my room here to see if I can see any. I wish the Sean's and the Josh's was here because they could just drop one down right off the bat.
Just rattle them all off.
My question with this, though, I'm wondering if Risk itself is not like the best one per se, but because of this, we got so many great ones. Like it was an inspirational one, kind of like vanilla ice cream. Like it's the best. It's the most popular ice cream because it's in all the bases of milkshakes and all that good stuff. It's in everything.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, Vicky. There's that school of thought, and then there are people like me that think, you know what, a game eventually just gets replaced. Yeah, you know, and that happens a lot in the world of board gaming, where you know what, I'm no longer going to play that game anymore because this game is a replacement because it's much better. I wish I could think of a better area control game off the top of my head than Risk, and my friends are going to just go, "Are you an idiot? You know about this?" But I know they exist. But Vicky makes a point. Risk did open the door for a lot of different kind of gaming.
Small World.
Well, there you go. That's actually an area control game. It's better than Risk.
And that's actually Small World came in at number 12.
All right, just kind of sneaking in on
and
that.
And where was Risk at?
That was number 8.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, see, Small World, thank you, Vicky. I knew I couldn't think of one. Small World, to me, is much better than Risk. It's much more fun. It has got a lot more variety. I mean, you can, and it's a fantasy base, and you really get such variety from mixing these different attributes together with different as fantasy races.
Ooh, The Godfather, is that technically an area control?
That was an interesting game. We played it like once.
We played it when we did the charity event.
It's a worker placement area control, and Josh definitely loves that game. Mm-hmm. And it's an Eric Lang. Eric Lang made that game.
It was fun.
It's a fun game. Yeah. But Small World definitely is a classic. It's now it's old enough that I think it's now classic. In the classic category. I will play that over Risk so much more. I'll play anything
over Risk, to be perfectly honest.
I love Risk.
So
do you?
Yeah, I played it a bunch when I was a kid. Oh, okay.
So what BJ is saying about Risk is what I'm going to say about number 7.
Okay.
Where it's like, this probably did pave way, but there's so many other games that replace it. But before we get to number 7, we miss number 9.
Yeah. Oh, yes. What's number 9?
I will give you guys a hint. Number 9 is inspired a lot of app games.
App games.
Oh, and it has to do with words.
Scrabble.
Yeah. Scrabble.
Yeah. Oh, that totally makes sense. Like, I always forget that that's a board game.
Right?
It is.
I mean, obviously it is. Honestly, but
it's a go-to for a lot of people, too. Even though I hate the game, it does deserve to be in the top 10.
I was going
to
say, if it wasn't for the app games being so prevalent, not just, you know, what's the one that they have, the big one?
Words with Friends.
Words with Friends, but then they have so many other offshoots and variations. It deserves to be on there.
You quickly realize the people that want to play Words with Friends or Scrabble are the ones who have a gigantic vocabulary and will absolutely destroy you every single time. And I'm going to say this. I don't feel that QI, which is chi, is a real word, and yet everyone gets to use it, and it just pisses me off.
Well, it is. It's an award in a different language.
I know. Yes. I thought those weren't allowed.
Yeah, you have a good point. Unless unless all of a sudden Oxford goes, we're making it American.
Well, yeah, they always allow it. So I don't know. Whoever makes the rules are full of something.
But they're just full of cheese.
Yeah.
But just like IT's number 7, Dominion. Yes.
Dominion. So is that's the deck builder, right?
Yeah, wow. It's a deck builder.
Okay. Yeah. I got to tell you, now they've opened the door, because Dominion is not a board game, it's a card game, but I'm glad that they're letting us know that card games are part
everything,
of this.
Everything, yes.
Well, yeah. Then I know what's better be in the top three, then. If Dominion is in there, then I shouldn't be surprised. Yeah, I shouldn't be surprised at the top three. Okay,
so at that point, since they're allowing Dominion, I'm just going to throw out Magic the Gathering. I want to know where they consider that one.
Oh, that's going to be, like I said, that's top three.
Magic the Gathering is technically not in this.
Well, and that's BS.
But Dominion's a card game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a deck builder, but it's still a card game.
I'm wondering if they're not counting Magic the Gathering because it's one its own world and you have to continuously buy different packs and cards.
No, that's
BS. What I'm wondering. I don't know. Maybe people don't think.
Yeah, that's a bad excuse if that is. I mean, I see what you're saying, Vicky. I know, but that there's no excuse for Magic not being in.
Magic's a collectible thing, though. So I think you can't include collectibles, right? Because in the sense Magic, although it is a board game and can be played, it's also a collectible. Like, you can't include,
you can just throw the stupid
Magic
list out.
I agree with Rev.
You know what I think it is? I think people just didn't really think of Magic being a board game, quote unquote, and when they see boxes of board game, like, even if it's a card game, it's in a box, you think it's a board game.
Yeah, I think Vicky and Joe are on the same path, on that right path.
I don't know
the fact
came
that
first.
It's collectible, like, I understand.
I'm not saying it's right. I just think, because this is people voting on stuff. They put something out and people get a vote on it. I just think nobody thought put Magic the Gathering.
That's ridiculous. If you're not even, you shouldn't be making a list if you don't think of Magic.
Yeah, ranker, stop making lists.
Because if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, but I think Dominion came after Magic. And basically Dominion is nothing but, what did you guys used to play, Joe? Was it Chaos Magic where you just put a deck in front of you and flip cards over and you guys would play a tournament? What would they call that?
Oh, Mental Magic.
Yeah, Mental Magic. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's all deck builders are. I mean, as a matter of fact, I mean, the guys that made Star Realms, they used to be Magic players, and I think they probably got the idea from, like, hey, we could make a game that's like Mental Magic, but sell it.
Good. Let the anger flow through you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, all right. So, anyway, I mean,
no, but you have a Dominion's good point,
I will say Dominion's also not the best deck builder out there, but I get why people, it's one of the first.
Just the most well known sort of.
But I still would argue it is not the best deck.
What's the next one on this list?
That's why I'd rather play Ascension. This is a game I actually don't think I've ever heard of. Carcassonne Hunters and Gatherers.
Oh, well, Carcassonne is a classic. It is an area game where you have to control areas. So it's kind of area control the way it is, but it's you lay down tiles and the tiles have patterns, and then you got to put dudes on the tiles to control enough patterns that give you points, control enough areas, I should say. Carcassonne itself. Now, Hunters and Gatherers, I know nothing about that version of it because they've got a skillion expansions. But Carcassonne itself is another classic. It's a classic game to me that's in the era of Catan.
And,
it's a new, but it's also an old game.
In the early
2000s. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It deserves to be on the list. Carcassonne, people love it. Z-Man's a great guy. I just hate Carcassonne because it's spatial, and I have a hard time with spatial.
Fair enough on that one.
But it deserves to be on the list.
All right, so we got 5 left. And in the top 5, you guys are going to be angry because there are 2 of the same type. Like, they're the same thing, but one's a different version of it.
Oh really?
Wow. Okay.
In the top 5, Settlers of Catan, is that in there?
That is number 1.
I just beat the lead on that one. I guess, yeah. It's the one that you always see it in, like, popular media.
It's the intro. Honestly, it's an introduction game. That is the first board game I played that got me into board gaming.
Yeah, and Catan is, it definitely became, like, anybody that would play Monopoly, you'd go, hey, let's play Catan. It's very much, you can do this.
Mm-hmm. It's like, what do they call it when they...
Gateway?
Gateway drug.
Yeah.
And I'm not, Catan's had great success.
I'm trying to think of all the popular ones that I like. So
there's another Gateway one in there, too.
Ticket
to Ride.
Yeah. Can't argue with that either. Ticket to Ride's quality.
Which Ticket to Ride?
The way you're saying that, I would assume then at that point it's not America. So yeah, I would go with Europe.
Europe is number 5 and the regular one is number 2.
Okay, yeah. So I've heard a lot of people say that they really like the Europe one.
I don't, I've never played Europe, so I don't know what difference it makes. But if it's the same game but with a different map, but you still have to do the same things and it's not adding anything else, and I don't know, I think it's unfair to put that on the list.
It says that
you got to choose one or the other.
Brand new gameplay elements, including tunnels, ferries, and train stations.
Oh, then that's
okay,
a new,
so it
that's
does
a new
add
thing.
Some extra things. Yeah,
all right,
which
that's
that
a new
totally
thing.
Makes sense at that point. And it's again one of those games where you can actually say, "Hey, would you like to play Ticket to Ride?" To your non-gamer friends.
But Rev...
And they have a good chance of them actually knowing it.
But I would still argue there are so many amazing games out there that Ticket to Ride shouldn't take two spots.
Like, oh, I agree with it. It shouldn't take two.
Pick Europe or pick the regular, but I am sorry. It does not deserve two spots in the top 10 just because of all the other great games out there.
It's like when you put in a sequel. Just put in the franchise for a thing. Like, just go with that so you don't take up space. And
I have to say one thing, Vicky. If Gloomhaven is not on this list, which is the number one non Dungeon Master needed RPG game ever created, and a ridiculous Kickstarter phenomenon. And even now, I think, are they selling like a version of Gloomhaven at Target? I think I saw.
Probably.
This is insane if that's not even in the top 20, but it should be in the top 10, in my opinion. You boot off one of the Ticket to Rides and you put in Gloomhaven.
You're not going to like where it's at.
Oh, no.
Where's it at?
46.
Damn, that is way too deep for that.
It's way low. And
it's
I'm not a Gloom...
Game of Thrones beats it at 45.
Yes. Game of Thrones does not beat Gloomhaven. Game of Thrones is not...
Yeah, as much as I love the Game of Thrones game, and I just love the fact that I can manipulate the hell out of everyone playing that game, and the only reason why I ever lost is because of the stupid dragons, like, which I guess is just the whole thing for what Game of Thrones would be. But yeah, no, I really like that game, but it should be higher, but Gloomhaven should definitely be way higher.
It's tough because it was released in 2017, so it's, I don't know, you could say it's classic because it just hasn't been out long.
Yeah, these are the best board games of all time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, but see, if you have a great board game that comes out and just kicks ass, it should be in there just like anything that's great.
Right, so we hit it all but like, what, 3 and 4?
3 and 4.
All right, what do we got?
I will say number 4 is one BJ does not like because it's spatial.
Oh. Which
but
one?
It still may be good, though.
No, you don't like it.
Oh, is chess on this list?
Yes,
chess
that's
is
what it
game.
Is.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, chess. Okay, the original OG board game.
Yeah, OG.
I can't argue with chess.
Yeah.
You know,
how is chess not number 1?
Because there's a Catan is. And it's ranker. People are voting on it.
Yeah. Right. You got a good point.
Does anybody here like or know how to play chess? I don't know how to play chess.
I was literally in chess club in junior high. And so
I was in anime club. I didn't know anything. That doesn't mean anything.
Well, I did know a little bit about chess, and I haven't gotten back into it because why? I don't really necessarily need to. But yeah, I do know a little bit about it, but it just turns into studying moves. And the Queen's Gambit, when you watch the show, it's pretty on target with that. It's just literally memorizing way things open and then going from there. And then it gets deeper as you're going along.
And I think the reason why it's at number 4, maybe not a little bit like higher on the list or lower or whatever, is because of the Queen's Gambit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just the fact
it's a classic.
People know about it. Yeah. It did, that whole show really did get a resurgence in chess. So it makes sense.
It's a quality game that holds up. I mean, you know, you've got components that do different things. I mean, the game, what I love about a game is a game that breaks its own rules by basically having pieces move differently and all of that. It requires a tremendous amount of strategy. I as much as I can't play the game because spatially my brain can't figure it out, still got to give it love.
Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those like universal games that you can go anywhere in the world and you will find somebody who knows how to play it.
Yeah.
And you don't need to worry about like a language barrier or anything.
Totally.
Number 3 is one I didn't realize was this old. Oh. I mean, it's not... Okay, maybe I'm aging myself. But it came out a year after I graduated high school in 2008. Pandemic.
Yeah, you know what? I've never played Pandemic, and the only time we were about to, all of the pieces were kind of splayed out. And I was like, no, I'm good. I don't need to worry about this.
The thing with Pandemic is that it's a cooperative game.
Yeah.
You need to have everyone... You're playing against the game. And if you have somebody that's way too quote unquote alpha, they're going to make every move for you. And it's like, you might as well just play the game by yourself.
And we've talked about this before too. Like BJ, you kind of basically retired that game just because one person will be an alpha. And then what fun is it for everybody else?
Yeah, I did give it to Vicky because I mean, I played it enough to go, okay, I know what this game is doing. It's a very, very clever game. People tell me Pandemic Legacy is amazing.
I hear good things too.
Yeah. So, but I won't begrudge it being in the list.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I'm sorry. But see, popularity has to be part of it because Pandemic is definitely more popular than Twilight Imperium as far as sales.
Yeah. On top of, I heard. I think it sold out in some places when. You know, the pandemic started.
Interesting.
Funnily enough, maybe not
Matthew,
funny.
Matthew Leacock, what did you know that we didn't know?
Maybe people are trying to figure out how to fix everything by playing the game.
It's like, I need another place. Meet in Atlanta.
I'm surprised Uno's not on the list, though. I thought Uno would be in the top 10.
It's a card game.
I mean, not the top 10, but...
Dominion, I don't even know.
I'll post the list on Facebook. Go check it out. And until next time, stay nerdy.